Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind the counter.
Here we are, a skinny country in the largest ocean on Earth, spellbound, windswept, lashed. The land is like a canoe heading south to an icy continent or heading north to equatorial islands. No one seems to know. On Tuvalu, the ocean is rising. In San Francisco, the ocean is rising. In Sydney, the ocean is rising. In Nagoya, the ocean is rising. While here, in Paikakariki, outside my window, the Tasman Sea, moonbound, rises and falls. It breaks up on the seawall and falls. The land is like a seabird, but where are its wings? The land is like a fish, the fish of Maui, hauled up from the seafloor, writhing. The ocean is a road, a table, and a bed. It takes our bodies up to air and floats them. The ocean is an open question. The ocean is an open sewer. So far, it takes what it gets. Toxins, dead zones, blooms, blasts, oil, waste, radiation. Our country is asleep, dreaming of a gull that circles the Pacific and circles every island. Our country is forgotten where it lies. On Antarctica, the Pacific is rising. In Mahuro, the Pacific is rising. People leave when they cannot stay. In Lima, the Pacific is rising. On Nuku'u'nonu, the Pacific is rising. In Paikakariki, the Pacific is rising. Around the rim, it calms, feeds, enlivens human beings, while we, its offspring, resourceful and distracted, give back plastic and acid. Today, the sea came gently to the seawall and pulled back into itself in the overall global uprising. The whole indivisible ocean that has no motive and no name fits over the earth like a blessing and slips around, between, and over the territories and nations we have made. Currents, drifts, and creatures come and go. It shows up outside my window, and though spellbound and moonbound, is unbound with a swell and momentum of its own. Because we have emerged from it, perhaps, we have a mind for its envelopment and treachery. Its weight, sheen, depth, saltiness, and flow. Our country is a park. We have the high ground and the low ground. Our mountains are peace flags, and we're free to break out of bush, flax, pingao, or any dead-end ideology onto a charged and open-ended coast. The land is like a knife out of its sheath and glinting in the sun. I'd like to hold that pointed knife. I'd like to speak with that knife. I'd like to save a home, a tribe, and a heritage with that knife. And all I can do is rise, both before and after I fall. All I can do is rally. All I can do is write. I can try to see and mark both where and how we are. All I can do is plant. All I can do is vote for the fish, the canoe, the ocean to survive, the rise and fall. All I can do is plead. All I can do is call. Kia rana, pulavanaka, talofa lava, faka alofa atu. Welcome to Books and Beyond. Metaki Karen, that was a beautiful poem, The Uprising by Dana Hawken. Interestingly, I found this in the Griffith Review, the wonderful edition. Edition, the one that was called Pacific Highways. And interestingly, when I went to look it up, I discovered that there was a seventh section which perhaps didn't fit into their page limit for the edition, which had a lovely line which ended like this. I just love it. Under my grip is helplessness, and under that grip is an earthbound love for this particular place in the ocean. Isn't that lovely?
That's really lovely. It really makes me feel very much at home here in Aotearoa, the southernmost part of the Polynesian Triangle that stretches across this spellbound Pacific Ocean. So It's also Pacifica Month. Auckland Library celebrates Pacifica every March, as does all Auckland, I think. We celebrate the richness of Pacific cultures and acknowledge the importance of our Pacific communities. We have showcase events like Polyfest, which is the secondary school's cultural festival, on this week. We have Pacifica on the 24th and 25th of March, now in its 26th year at the Western Springs Park, an amazing spectacle. I go for the food and as well as the culture. And in Auckland Libraries, we have several Pacifica events. Check out our website to find out what's on. But on Books and Beyond, well, we have books and we have songs from the Pacific. So I don't feel authoritative enough to talk about books from all of the Pacific. So what I brought along today is a selection of books that have been memorable to me and which have deepened my knowledge of the Pacific. So shall we start, Karen?
Let's start.
First off, I've bought Slavers in Paradise by H.E. Maud. I know it's not the gem from the basement section, but actually I did find it in the basement.
I think we can have more than one gem from the basement for
Thank
show
you.
If we want.
It was first published in 1981, but it's about the Peruvian labor trade in Polynesia between 1862 and 1864. So I think that's around the time of the American Civil War, isn't it, Karen?
Yep.
Yeah, so little is known about this demographic catastrophe. It was a real eye-opener for me. The book is complete with figures and tables that illustrate the magnitude of the impact of these raids on our Pacific Islands. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the cover of the book, inside cover of the book. This is the story of the barks and the brigs that sailed out of Kalao in Peru, calling at every Pacific Island group except Hawaii, kidnapping thousands of men, women and children by violence and treachery and transporting them into slavery and death. It is an absorbing narrative of the conflict between human greed and bewildered innocence. So it also talks, the blurb here is talking about the fact that this book fills a knowledge gap for both Pacific and Latin American history, linking the fortunes and misfortunes of the societies. And it gives the island peoples of the Pacific part of their own history, their own heritage. So, and it did. It had a meaning to me. My father, born in Rakahanga and Manahiki, hailing from the Northern Cook Islands, their islands were severely affected by these raids. I mean, small populations just and the able-bodied men taken, leaving the elderly and women and children behind, and they perhaps really never recovered from that period. So definitely a recommended read from me. So what did you find in the Auckland Library Pacific Collection, Karen?
Well, is this in the Pacific Collection? I took it from the Auckland Research Centre. So when I think of Pacific poetry, literature, of course, I always think, first of all, of Albert Wendt. And I remember I used to organize the Stars of Pacifica Poetry events at Central Library. And when we did the very first one, we were working on the run sheet. Selena Tusitala Marsh said immediately, now our poet laureate, said immediately, of course, we have to start with Albert because, and this is what she said, he is the father of us all. And I had this immediate vision of a sort of a creation myth with Albert, you know, shining there like Rangi, the sky father. But Albert would be the first one to laugh at that, or to chuckle at that. It was his way because he's so lovely and kind. He would not laugh at me. But in fact, he has been the pioneering Pacifica writer in New Zealand, and he has always fostered and promoted all of the vast Pacifica literary talent is here in New Zealand. But above all, he's actually, I think, opened up the Pacific experience to all New Zealanders, and this is what I particularly love about his work. So I've brought his book, The Adventures of Vela, which is, he called it his life's work, and he's been writing it. He began writing it in the 1970s, and it wasn't published until 2009, so you can see quite a long work, and it's quite a picaresque, kind of in the tradition of works like Don Quixote. So Vela is a voyager, and there's a lovely piece at the beginning about the sea, so I thought I'd start with that. It's a novel in verse. The entire book is in verse. So this section is called Songs of the To'olo. Yet unfluent in the sea's languages, in the beach's dreaming, in the coral's pain, in the turtle's talk, in the dolphin's leaping, in the sway's slow dance, in the octopus's grasp. At 10, he could catch the to'olo's fluent skip, sweep, and leap, its quivering caress on his skin, its wise songs of islands to the south, where men ate dogs, sharks, and one another, sucking up the blood's salt tunes and mana, and hung their anaya from aoa trees to dry, and the fat daughters of Po suckled insatiable Aitu with dog claws and pig mouths on the milk of the earth's languages. As his lean mother had tuned him at her hungry breast, shaping the net of his ears to snare the lullabies of all things. Isn't that lovely?
Very lovely.
And, however, I am going to add on to that because I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I wish, unfortunately, I can't do such a good job of reading it as Albert Cote, who has this beautiful bass voice, very resonant and very musical. So it would have done more justice had he been here to read it himself. But I just wanted to add in this other section, which is a sort of an opposite view of an opposite tone to the writing, an opposite view of Vela. So it says, this is an aside. There are many asides in the book. By now, many of you will be asking, how come none of Vela's adventures are set in or about the world as it is? Why are his stories in the dimension of tall tales and sci-fi? Is he a believer in the many-world theory of reality? Can we believe he's over 300 years old, an anachronism who's totally out of it? Can you trust me, his chronicler? Let me assure you, Vela is in the real world and knows it more complexly than us because he's lived the longest and traveled the world over. For instance, he knows a latte from a cappuccino, from a flat white, a Chardonnay from a Merlot, from a Coke, from a Vailima, a Sears from a Walmart, from the Kremlin, from the White House. And when I asked him why he never storied his adventures in those realms, he replied, that world's terror is beyond fiction and my reckoning, beyond my tongue's ability to represent it and my heart to mourn and forgive it. But because it is your birth and future right, you will continue storying it for our Mokopuna and anyone else who wants to understand the unfolding terror.
Ah, wisdom from the Pacific. Thank you, Karen. So we're going to have our first song for the show, brought to you by Te Vaka. Enjoy.
Away.
La haka hali ali yetu. La haka ali ali yetu.
Yeah, welcome back. It's time to stop dancing around the studio and introduce my second book for the day, for today. Tupaia, the remarkable story of Captain Cook's navigator, written by New Zealand maritime historian and novelist Joan Druitt, as she's described. And
I'm going to put in there that we have Maritime Museum on our tongues because Maritime Museum very kindly sponsored us with some lovely prizes.
That's
for our
right,
great summer
which we gave out recently.
Which we recently awarded, yeah.
For the Great Summer Read. So, yes, and Tupaia. Wow, another remarkable book. It's remarkable's in the title, and that's because I personally found it remarkable. I was fascinated by the insights into pre-colonial Polynesian culture that Joan so cleverly tells us. So I think her skill as a researcher and as a novelist, she sort of pulls it all together and you end up reading her works as if it's a novel, but it is researched and so therefore twice as enjoyable, I guess. I guess you get two books in one. So I read this quote, which I think by a reviewer of Tupai when it came out, "Often we are told what great navigators ancient Polynesians were, but seldom has it been demonstrated so convincingly or with such clarity." So that gives you, you know, sort of backs up what I've been trying to say about Tupaia. And I'm just going to read a short piece. I've even put post-its in my book
to mark the beginning and the end.
Yeah, I can see a smile on your face.
Doesn't
right.
look short.
So this is an introduction, I think, about Tupaia. He came from Raiatea in Tahiti. And ended up travelling with Captain Cook to New Zealand, Australia, and I think he was on his way back to England on the Endeavour, but sadly succumbed to scurvy and did not make it. But his impact or just his presence on the boat made a huge difference to his voyage around New Zealand and interaction with Māori at the time. So here we go from the book. "Wayfinders like Tupaia were the inheritors of a long and impressive tradition. Their remote ancestors were skilled sailors who had burst into the Western Pacific from the Southeast Asia more than 3,000 years earlier to settle in the islands of Fiji. At about the time of Christ, that Christ was born, they colonized Tonga and Samoa, where Polynesian language and culture developed." So moving on in the book, I thought I'd find, you know, handily on the same page, page 19, as a reference
to
yes, my eye spotted a bit about Manahiki, the islands where my dad was born. So,
wow.
Yeah, and it's talking about trade. Tahiti, the island of Raiatea, was not only the... Raiatea was not only the religious hub of the central and eastern Pacific, it was also a trading hub, mm-hmm. which the book introduced me to. So we're talking about the trade around the different islands, and all these were bartered in the high islands for breadfruit, taro, yams, cooking bananas, tapa cloth, and volcanic rocks, essential for heating earth ovens. Manahiki in the Northern Cook Islands exported pearl shell used in sacred ceremonies. Tonga, I turned the page there.
Yeah.
Tonga was a source of highly valued red feathers from the heads of tropical parakeets. And then there was Raiatea's intangible export. Religion. So there you go.
That's a good passage to read because it does leave an intriguing moment for those who want to read more. Just want to get started on page 19 from your section.
Yes. So that another recommended read from me if you're interested in the history of the Pacific and you know, like me being part Polynesian, more about who I am and where I've come from, which I find fascinating.
I think we can recommend all of Joan Druitt's books. I'd like to put out there also. So just in along the lines of the place that speaks to you, as you said, so when I went looking for my second selection for our Pacific session today, today, I thought immediately of a poem written by an American poet who lived in Big Sur, Robinson Jeffers, who wrote a beautiful poem about the Pacific, about putting aside the, you know, the Atlantic is just a moat and the Mediterranean is just a blue pool, but the Pacific is actually the eye of the world. But I, when I went down to the basement to get it, and I found it in a treasure from the basement called The Sea, a book of poems all about the ocean, I found another poem that I liked even better. So you can get the book out and read the Robinson Jeffers poem, which is very tied to a certain time, which was the Pacific War, whereas Walt Whitman, I think, is more timeless and also slightly less, more celebratory and less argumentative. I was surprised to look over this book and see how many poems written about the ocean in the late 19th century were quite imperialist. But Walt Whitman was always a rebel. He was a conscientious objector during the Civil War that we spoke about before. And this poem is called In Cabined Ships at Sea. And it refers to both seas and books. So I thought it'd be perfect. In cabined ships at sea, the boundless blue on every side expanding, with whistling winds and music of the waves, the large, imperious waves, or some lone bark buoyed on the dense marine, where joyous, full of faith, spreading white sails, she cleaves the ether mid the sparkle and the foam of day, or under many a star at night. By sailors young and old, haply will I, a reminiscence of the land, be read in full rapport at last. Here are our thoughts, voyagers' thoughts. Here not the land, firm land, alone appears, may then by them be said. The sky o'er arches here. We feel the undulating deck beneath our feet. We feel the long pulsation, ebb and flow of endless motion. The tones of unseen mystery, the vague and vast suggestions of the briny world, the liquid flowing syllables, the perfume, the faint creaking of the cordage, the melancholy rhythm, the boundless vista and the horizon far and dim are all here, and this is ocean's poem. Then falter not, O book, fulfill your destiny, you not a reminiscence of the land alone, you too as a lone bark cleaving the ether, purposed I know not whither, yet ever full of faith. Consort to every ship that sails, sail you. Bear forth to them folded my love, dear mariners, for you I fold it here in every leaf. Speed on my book, spread your white sails, my little bark, athwart the imperious waves. Chant on, sail on, bear o'er the boundless blue from me to every sea this song for mariners and all their ships. So that would be for Tupaya and for Captain Cook.
Yes, and for all those who have traveled by ship.
Who have made the voyage across the ocean.
To and from around. So thank you, Karen. That was beautiful. I'm sorry now, but my third book may take a bit of time to get through. Martini by Rachel. The author is Rachel Reeves, who also hails from California in the U.S., like you once came from, I guess.
I still do come from.
Yeah, you still come from.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, so Rachel has a Cook Island grandmother, and the Martini, is the story of Cyclone Martin and how it destroyed life and living on the northern Cook Islands atoll of Manahiki on the 1st of November 1997. Which is was the first day of the cyclone season that year, as it is every year. It's an event I will never forget because, along with 18 others, it took the life of my brother Paul. So the author, Rachel, was asked to write this book by the Cyclone Martin Charitable Trust so that future generations will know about the night the sea came over the land and how everything changed. I have to say Rachel did an excellent job in writing this book. And I know that she took the role seriously. She weaved the narratives of the survivors the story she wanted to tell very well, so well. The narratives... So she committed a year of her life to telling this story thoroughly and truthfully. And I think she skillfully did that and sympathetic to the survivors. Mm-hmm. So, yes, thank you, Rachel. But She was also brave enough or courageous enough to discuss the tough issues. And this book is not just a touching story. It's she discusses the role of climate change, of disaster management, or should we say the disaster of disaster management. And as a result, the effects or the management of cyclone damage in the Pacific Islands, I think, has it was the marking of change and improvement. So every year we are faced with the ravages of Mother Nature, and the we have to respect that the ocean that we live in, and so. I think we're getting better at managing these disasters as a result. So I'm going to read a little bit from the introduction of Martini about the disaster management side. The Cook Islands government had sold off radio, and as a result, there was no reliable shortwave service in the Northern Islands. Weather warnings were spotty and explicit, issued by an officer in Fiji. The Prime Minister was largely absent from the public sphere that day. There was a mysterious, inexplicable delay in search and rescue, which may have not cost lives, but the fact is 10 families had to face the agony of not knowing. When Manahiki was rebuilt, bureaucrats overrode the opinions of locals. The people who live with the consequences of decisions they made, the government's response, the aftermath of Martin, was for some survivors more disastrous than the disaster itself. There was never an official inquiry into the responses. The people affected remained voiceless. This is their story, denied for nearly two decades. It is a story of survival and what it takes and what it means. It is about the people who overcame fear with courage and disaster with dignity. It is a testament to the resilience of the people of the island and the strength of their spirit. So I'd like to say...
That's a really important book. Well done for bringing that.
Thank you, Karen.
And I think there's a more personal...
That's right.
Touch
so,
to...
I'd like to thank Rachel for telling that story. And for us, so respectfully. And there is a lot to learn from Martini. So the book is available at several Auckland libraries to loan. So, Karen, did you find something else?
No, it's your turn to introduce our final musical interlude.
Have we reached the end of our show?
Have.
Oh, my gosh.
That was why I was waving my hand.
Well, I have to say...
Oh, you thought I was waving, putting my hand up in class. I've got something to read. No.
Yes, that's right.
Over to you.
Okay. So, that's a shame that our show has reached the end today. I really enjoyed talking about the Pacific with everyone today. Our final song is also along the theme of journeying and voyages, as our stories have been. But instead of an ancient story, we've got a modern one here. We've got my father expressing his dream for his children and his grandchildren to return or go on a journey to their homeland, being the last surviving member of his family and the last of the generation who came to New Zealand in the 1950s and 60s for a better life here. He starts with a narrative between my niece and my father and Papa Cookie, and expressing that dream that we all return to his island, his homeland, our homeland. And then it's followed by a song that he wrote and sings for us. So
wonderful.
So enjoy, and ka kite anō.
So, Papa, if you can just talk about what the importance is from your perspective about your family, us as your kids and grandchildren, about being able to connect back home to where you're from?
Yeah, I believe that my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren should make a visit home to find out who they are, where they come from, because I know that my families are so important to me, and therefore I just wish that to pass on that knowledge to my children so they know who they are, because I just wish that I could turn back the page, turn back the time, so that my children will know who we are and what we really were in those days in the Maniki community.
Eat.